The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
And so, in any case, life presses on, and in my life, personally, I have the privilege of living with two beautiful girls who are, well, let's say creatures of habit when it comes to food. And I'm not being sarcastic, it is a privilege to have these individuals in my life, or at least to be a part of their life, I should say, is a, more of an honor. And what this means is that my wife and my youngest daughter, they tend to stick to certain types of foods that they like, and even those foods have to be prepared a certain way in order for it to be something that they enjoy. And they are opening up and getting a little more broad in the spectrum of food when it comes to go. But my eldest daughter and I are very different in this regard. We like a variety of foods, and whenever we go out to eat, I, for one, enjoy perusing the menu and looking at the different options and the things that I might be able to try to something new or something different, you know, because you never know when you might come across something that's like, wow, that is really good. I am so glad that I went out on a limb and tried that dish. But, of course, this is not always a success story, that you do come across foods that are not that good. Sometimes it's a hit, and the flavors, you know, dance around in your mouth, and, you know, like a cerveza doing a tango with fish tacos on your bicuspids, or, you know, perhaps a piece of chocolate cake or amaretto pie swirling around in your mouth. It can be very, very pleasing, and it leaves an impression on us, doesn't it, when something pleases our palate. But other times it's a miss, and you might come across something that leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And all of us have had experiences with this, whether you're a creature of habit or not, that you know, you come across a food that's not so great, and you kind of politely reach for the napkin and nonchalantly kind of, you know, discard the food in your mouth and try not to get noticed in the process. But this too leaves an impression on us. It leaves a mark in our mind that tells us these are the things that are not so good to me, that these are the things I don't really want to try again. And, you know, this past Feast of Tabernacles, you know, we all get to try something hopefully new, or at least enjoy the foods we really like at the Feast of Tabernacles. And there could be a variety of things that we enjoy, but this last feast, we went to Huhat Mongolian Grill, which is a place that my family likes because you get to pick and choose what you like, and then they cook it and prepare it the way you want it, and it's almost always very, very good. Of course, if you're going to go there, I do recommend telling them ahead of time before you get up to the grill that it's kosher, so that they will clean the grill off for you, and they clean it very well as to not contaminate it with unclean foods. In any case, the point is when I was going through the, you know, the different bars of the meats and the vegetables and the sauces and the fruits, I looked at one of the displays, and I noticed some new items on the menu, and one of them was cranberries, and I thought, wow, that looks really good. I like cranberry juice, you know. Dried cranberries are really nice. So I thought, I'm going to put a couple large spoonfuls of cranberries and see how that goes. And after it was cooked up and then we get it out and we start eating, I thought, not such a good idea. It kind of left a sour, kind of a bitter flavor in almost all the food. It kind of contaminated the rest of the food. And I didn't really enjoy that very much, but it was almost Sabbath, so there was no getting other food. I just kind of ate it, you know. Some of us are able to do that. Grapefruit, that's another thing. Some people really like grapefruit, and I really wish I liked grapefruit because the sound of it, it looks and it sounds very good, but it just has some this flavor that just rubs me the wrong way. And so anytime I'll have something with grapefruit in it, I can taste it like that, and I'm like, no, let's stay away from that food. And so there are some things that leave a bad taste in our mouth, and this is a familiar expression to us that goes beyond food. Leaving a bad taste in your mouth has come to be a metaphor that represents a lasting feeling or a memory, something that impresses us, but unfavorably. Unlike waltzing with Cabernet and steak, it would be more like a bad taste in your mouth could be floundering with sauerkraut on a peanut butter cracker. And that shouldn't, I don't know, maybe that's good. I never tried that, but it doesn't sound very good. In any case, sometimes people rub us the wrong way and it leaves a lasting impression. And other times we find that there are people that are quite pleasant. They're accommodating, they're helpful and encouraging, and that impresses us, doesn't it? In a positive way. And so the question for us today is, what kind of impression are we leaving on other people? Is it favorable? Is it savory? Or perhaps unpleasant, or leaving a bad taste in their mouth, so to speak? Let's go ahead and open up to Matthew in chapter 12. Matthew 12. A survey I had read recently indicated that the average person, again, the average person, holds around 27 conversations a day that last about 10 minutes each. And that would be more or less for some of us, depending on our line of work or how many people are in our family. But that roughly means that about 4.5 hours of each day we are interacting with others through conversation. And many of us are interacting with other people in various ways, through a collaboration of projects or at work or even in music as we play together in this world. And so how do people feel about us when we leave the room, when we depart from our conversation, when we leave the workplace? What is the impression that we have left on them? Have we made a positive or perhaps a negative impact on their minds? You know, it's unavoidable for us to leave an impression on others. There's no getting around it. Every one of us will gather an opinion about someone else in our minds. And these leave kind of a mark in your mind that we often go to when we see that person again. We go back to that mark or that impression that we have of them because of a conversation or a situation. And so what kind of marks are we leaving in the minds of people when all is said and done? Will they be pleasant? Or perhaps something that we would rather they did not remember? You know, Jesus made an impression on thousands of people during his ministry. And to some who did not understand him, and therefore did not understand God, it was an unpleasant impression, unpleasant marks in their minds about the Savior. But to many, it was a sweet savor about Christ being the Messiah. And it left an impression on these individuals of what God-revering people truly should be like, how we should treat one another, what our efforts should be toward in life. And so Christ was not afraid, we see. Christ was not afraid of hard work. He was not afraid to get his hands dirty. He wasn't afraid to reach out and to mingle with the downtrodden, those individuals that were looked down upon by the scribes and the Pharisees. And so Christ touched people in various ways, and he did so in an effort to better their lives, to give them hope and direction. And his display of service in this way, I think, was the most powerful aspect of his life. And I think the first most powerful aspect of Christ's ministry was his words. And so the Savior related numerous statements and parables that were encouragement, and they impressed people, and they continue to affect people today. He said things like, man shall not live by every word alone, by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. A quote from the Old Covenant. He said that it's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but it's what comes out of the mouth that defiles a man or a woman. He said that with men, these things are impossible, but with God, all things are possible. Lasting impressions that he made on those people, and it continues unto this day, centuries later. And so Christ became well known because of his words of wisdom, combined with his works, And the miracles that Christ performed during his ministry, these were a significant part of the impression that he left in the minds of untold numbers. Now, one such miracle was performed on the Sabbath. In Matthew 12, in verse 9, it says, "When he had departed from there, he went into their synagogue." Now, this is recorded in Matthew, just where we left off. We left off with several weeks ago. I think it was before the Feast of Tabernacles, actually. We left off at the first part of Matthew 12 with Christ going through a grain field with his disciples on the Sabbath. But this is now a different Sabbath where this event occurred. And this is evident by Luke 6. And continuing in verse 10, "And behold, on this particular Sabbath, in this particular synagogue, and behold, there was a man who had a withered hand. And they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him?" And so they, those people that asked him, were scribes and Pharisees. And these were individuals who were looking for fault with Jesus. And so this disabled man in the midst, it seemed to be an opportunity for them. You know, the term withered in this verse, it means that this individual had a shrunken or a hypotonic limb in technical medical terms. And so it's clear that this disability was some form of paralysis that he had suffered from. It didn't allow the arm to move, and it caused the muscle to shrink and therefore to contract. We may have seen people that have this where their limb is kind of curled under. They hold it like this, and it's not because that feels good to them, or it's because the muscles shrink and contract, and they can't control what the arm does any longer. Now, it's not known whether or not this disability was due to an abnormality at birth or perhaps a disease or some kind of accident that occurred postnatal. Either way, this man appeared to have an incurable handicap. And instead of these scribes and Pharisees being sympathetic to his situation, of hoping that Christ would be able to help this individual, of desiring to see him be healed, even if it was a Sabbath, Christ's accusers instead saw this as an opportunity to do harm to Christ, to ridicule Jesus. Continuing in verse 11 and 12, "Then he said to them," Christ replied, "What man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value then is a man than a sheep? And therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And so the common expression of an ox in a ditch was actually taken from a statement that Christ made later on in his ministry. This phrase, "a sheep in a pit," came first. Rarely does anybody use this term, "sheep in a pit." Perhaps it doesn't quite have the ring to it that an ox in a ditch does. But regardless of the verbiage, the concept, it remains the same. And Christ declared that it's lawful to attend to such needs on the Sabbath. Not wants, but needs on the Sabbath. And so anointing someone who is sick on the Sabbath does not violate the fourth commandment. And helping somebody who has the flu or some other kind of illness, this does not violate Sabbath protocol. And so healing this man, who had suffered disfigurement for who knows how long, having difficulty with his activities of daily living for much of his life, I mean, this was lawful and appropriate to do on the Sabbath. And so Christ proceeds in verse 13. He said, "Then he said to the man, Stretch out your hand. And he stretched it out. And it was restored as whole, just as his other arm or hand." You know, some were elated to see this poor man healed. And this event would have burned an image into the minds of those who saw it. And combining the imagery with what was said by Christ beforehand, we see that this left a mark or an impression on those individuals who were eyewitnesses to the miracle. And this impression was so strong that it was retold by three of the gospel authors, and it has continued to impress hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people unto this day. Now, we are not like Christ in the sense of being able to miraculously heal incurable diseases. But we are to be Christ-like in our sense, or in the sense of impressing on others what is good, what is right, and what is wrong. Now, when it comes to the Sabbath, perhaps many in the Church of God should ask themselves, are we doing what is lawful on the Sabbath? Is this having a good impression or making a lasting positive impression on others? You know, could it be that there are activities that we might be participating in on the Sabbath that some people are going to witness and think, well, maybe the Sabbath isn't so holy after all? You know, there's a lot of things that we can do that some people say we can't on the Sabbath. Could it be that we're giving people the wrong impression? Because in the wider Church of God, there are thousands that profane the Sabbath every week by profaning it by cooking food, by going out to eat at restaurants, by doing business, by paying others to work for them. And this kind of behavior, even though it might taste very good at the time at that restaurant, it really is leaving a bad taste in the mouths of many people. But there are many positive marks that we can make in the minds of others. We can be hospitable. We can be affectionate, encouraging, kind. We can assist others when help is needed, and even when help may not be needed, offering a lending hand or perhaps even just an ear for people to get something off of their chest. This can be very helpful, and it makes a difference in people's lives, and they remember it. It impresses them. You know, perhaps we were a part of something that left a mark in the mind of others at the Feast of Tabernacles this year. You know, many of us had volunteered for different events and to help out, and even if we did not, just being there and talking to people and interacting could have been a great help to many individuals. And maybe this is an impression that we made upon people that they'll take with them and perhaps be able to use in some way throughout the rest of the year, because we find ourselves being a part of a long line of descendants, of believers, of true Christians who have made an impression on us. And therefore, it is our duty, it is our reasonable service to pay it forward, to therefore go out and make a positive impression on others. Let's turn over a few pages to Matthew in chapter 22. Matthew 22. Christ's example, the impressions he left, were law-abiding ones. He lived his life within the boundaries of God's law, and also within the boundaries of the laws of the state. And when the Jews were suffering what seemed to most to be an unreasonable taxation, Christ was presented with a coin that bore the mark of Caesar. His response to those people was this, and they asked him, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And he responded in verse 21, after he had asked them, well, let's go ahead and go back. Verse 19, show me the tax money. And so they brought him a denarii. In verse 22 and verse 20, and he said to them, whose image and inscription is this? And they said to him, Caesar's. Well, he said to them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And so we can gain many lessons from this one statement, that we are to abide by the laws of the land, and we are to abide by the laws of God, that we are to pay our taxes to the state, and we are to pay our tithes to God. I mean, there are many things that we can gain from this one simple statement. And Christ is saying, respect the authority. God puts people in positions of authority for his purpose. And as long as it is not breaking the law of God, We are to abide by the laws of the state. Now, when it comes to the authority in the church, Christ was confronted again with the concept of what should we do? And let's look at Matthew 23 as an example. Probably turn over one page, Matthew 23. Regarding those in positions of authority at that time, in religious authority, Christ said in verse 2, that the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, and therefore whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do, but do not according to their works, for they say and do not do, and they bind heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move one of them with their fingers. So, in other words, what Christ was saying is that these individuals in positions of a religious authority, they taught the law, and they were also in charge of administrative decisions. And therefore, he's saying, do as they say, but do not do as they do. And what he was relating is, do not misuse the law. Do not mistreat people. Do not misjudge matters like they do. And this is a concept that many people has continued to struggle with even unto today. But the point is, we must always try to make a good impression on others, a law-abiding impression. And we live in a society with rules, and we have to abide or follow those rules. But how many of us have not, and have left an impression on others that it's okay to not pay attention to the speed limit signs, that, you know, it's okay to have a, you know, several drinks of alcohol and go out and drive. It's okay to disregard some of the laws of society. You know, how many of us have left an impression with that kind of a message on our family, on other people? Perhaps it's something that we should consider, because we are leaving a mark on others, whether we like it or not, whether we want to or not. And sometimes the impressions that we leave are for good, and other times, not so good. Let's go all the way back to Proverbs 25. Proverbs 25. You know, I think many of us have made mistakes in this way, but something that to remember is that we can go back and fix those mistakes. I know many times in my life, and I'm sure you have experienced this, when we have responded to someone or we're interacting with someone, and then we walked away from that conversation and thought, maybe I should have said that differently. Maybe I could have expressed it in another way. Maybe I did it wrong. Maybe I said the wrong thing. Well, how about going back? How about revisiting that conversation? Sometimes our pride, the pride of life, won't allow us to go back and try to fix and think, what I said is what I said. It's done. No, we need to go back and fix it, because that makes a strong impression on people that we make mistakes just like everybody else. Go back. Revisit the conversation. Tell them how we really feel or how we really wanted it to come out, that we really didn't mean to hurt their feelings. That wasn't our intent. You know, being a parent, I've done that many times with my children, and I hope that it's making an impression on them that, you know, I'm your dad, but I'm not perfect. I make mistakes too. And I hope you realize that it's not my intent to do any harm to anybody, that I really want to help you. So there's nothing wrong with going back and fixing the situation, you know. I remember one time while living in California, we used to live down the street from a Baja Fresh. It was probably about, I don't know, 3 blocks away from us. And I don't know if anybody has visited a Baja Fresh. It's, I guess you could call it a fast food restaurant, but I think I don't like to put it in that category, because even though you get your food rather quickly, it's of a higher quality. It's fresher produce, and it is in the Mexican Mexican type of food. But you order, you can burritos, tacos, whatever, salads, and then you go to this bar afterward, where they have a salsa bar, and there's like 4 different types of salsa, and there's onions and pico de gallo and jalapenos and peppers, and then it all looks nice on beds of lettuce with like tomatoes or onions and various things kind of sitting around, and you can load up on whatever you want to eat your food. Well, there was somebody in the church who told me that, you know, you can take that produce. know, those tomatoes, those onions there, you can take that. Oh yeah, my dad takes them all the time, you know. If you need a tomato at home for sandwiches, just go ahead and take it. And I thought to myself, huh, that's kind of interesting. And so I said, yeah, you know, that sounds right. It made an impression on me. So for the next several months or so, every time I visit, I'm like, oh yeah, I could use a tomato. Or, what, you know, take it on home, sure. But then my wife told me, you know, I don't think that's really what that's for. You know, just take if everybody took the produce, well, it wouldn't really look nice. You know, it'd kind of look empty. Take all the lettuce. Oh, I want to make a salad later. Let's take some lettuce. Let's take some onions, a tomato. In any case, the impression that was made upon me originally wasn't a good one. Sounded right at the time, but it wasn't really a good one. And sometimes we do that. But what's wrong with revisiting it later and saying, you know what, I think that's, I made a mistake, and that probably was not the intent. And, you know, people leave impressions on us that can last for a long time, and we leave impressions on others, whether we know it or not. But, and it's inevitable, I should say. It's inevitable that we are going to do this. But what is not predictable is what kind of impressions we will leave. You know, we have freedom of choice. We have the ability to make a difference for positive or negative. And we can control, therefore, the marks that we make in people's lives. And that's why Christ said to love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to those that hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. You know, that's highly unusual behavior. How many people in the world today do we see, you know, blessing those that hate you and loving their enemies and praying for those who spitefully try to persecute you? We don't see that behavior widely throughout the world, do we? On the contrary, we see people getting even more angry and more hateful and more spiteful, trying to do harm to others. But if we do the contrary, something that is not typical in this world, well, it leaves a strong and a lasting impression on other people. Now, it was said prior in Proverbs 25, God inspired Solomon to write in Proverbs 25, in verse 21, he said, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Eternal will reward you. Again, highly unusual behavior. Helping those who hate you, you know. But God said that the impression it will make is so strong that it can even cause your enemy to repent of the evil that they have done to you. And that's what heaping coals of fire on their head means. That it'll burn their conscience to where they're like, what am I doing? Well, this person is being so kind to me and helpful and wanting to help me. Why would I try to hurt them? As Paul said, if it's possible, as much as depends on you, he said, live peaceably with all men. So we don't have to go out into the world each day looking to pick a fight with people, looking to do justice to the unjust. You know, being a witness of God's truth is much more than open rebuke. It's living as a witness of God's truth and doing so with respect and with sincerity, kindness, this concept of brotherly love that we tend to, I think, forget so often in this world. But, you know, sometimes a positive impression is not well received by the other or by others at first. You know, we might rub people or rub someone the wrong way because of our faith, because of unbending integrity, not giving in to the ways of this world, and having a resolve to always do what is right in the face of evil is not going to be well received a lot of the time. You know, I had a job at Nessie Apparel, and I worked there for 3 or 4 years, and it was a good job. I liked those people, and I learned a lot while I was working there. I was able to manage the sample department, and my boss was a woman who had worked in the the garment industry for a long, long time, a lot of experience, years of experience. She knew how to handle customers. She knew how to handle the manufacturers. And she got a lot done. She was very productive. Being under her, when I began working there, she would occasionally come to me and say, "Hey, Terry, here's what I need you to do. Call those people that are asking for those clothes for that video that they're shooting or whatever it was, and tell them this." And it wasn't the truth. You know, "We didn't get it on time, and we'll get it to you in the next 2 days," because, and then make up some reason. I said, "I can't do that, Sharon." And she'd go look at me and kind of, you could see that she didn't like. I was rubbing her the wrong way. But then she would think and go, "Okay, just go ahead and tell them what happened." And so this happened several times, but very quickly she realized, "I'm not going to lower my standards for you or for anybody." And what was perceived as a negative impression at first, it led her to know, I can trust him. Always. I can always trust him to do what is right, and I can always trust him to tell me the truth, no matter what might be going on, no matter who might be affected. I can trust Terry. And so that became a lasting impression, even to the point where it came time for a raise. My wife was pregnant with our first child, and we had to increase our income. And so I asked for a raise, and I said, you know, if I could use this much. And I impressed her so much that she went to the CEO, or the CFO, and came back with almost double than what I had asked for. Because she liked what I was doing. She liked what I stood for, and she wanted to make sure that I stayed with the company. In any case, the point is that in the end, or down the road, I should say, what may have seemed like a sour or perhaps a bitter experience to some, an impression that was not favorable, in the end, they'll realize, oh, that was very sweet. That was really nice. That's something that's worth remembering for good. You know, sometimes people might be hurt by our faith or by something we might say, and they'll consider it negative at first, but it can become positive and will eventually become positive as long as we remain on God's side, as long as we remain in the faith. 1 Peter in chapter 2. There is an expression that some people use when witnessing an accident. And personally, I have said this numerous times when watching some of these home videos, you know, America's Funniest Home Videos, or some of these video clips you might see on YouTube of people falling off of a bicycle or dancing around in a ballroom and slipping and falling on their rear end, or perhaps a skateboard accident. And it can be kind of humorous, and you'll find that some people will go, "That's going to leave a mark." And it's kind of funny, and even those people that experienced the accident could laugh about it later. But at the time, it wasn't very funny. Usually is painful to some degree. And I remember as a youth riding my bicycle in the hillsides of Simi Valley, and it was a developing area, and so there was a lot of new housing tracks that were going up where I lived. And in these housing tracks built on a hillside, they would level off a place for a house, and there would be a steep decline, and then they'd level off another place and a steep decline and another place, and it kind of did that. So I go up to the top, and I'm thinking, this is going to be fun. And I go riding real fast on the level part, and then I go off the end, and instead of just kind of putting my handlebars down and just riding it down, no, I lift it up like I'm going off a jump. Big mistake. So you're up in the air and you're coming down a climb. You lift your head up, and what happens when I hit here? Bam. Comes down. I didn't crash, but as soon as my front wheel hit the ground, my head goes flying forward. I hit my mouth on the handlebars and chip off a big chunk of one of my teeth. And that left a mark. In fact, I eventually had to get a root canal done on that tooth, and I have a cap on it to this day. And but I learned a lesson. Wasn't a good impression at first. I thought, this is terrible. That hurt. What did I do? But it was a good one. It made me realize, hey, when you're going off an incline or a decline, You don't lift up your handlebars. No, just keep it down and ride it down, and you'll be okay. Another time I remember, as I was a young adult, I'm turning around, I'm riding, it's a summer, you know, California, people are watering their lawns, there's lots of activity going on. I remember riding down the street and enjoying a nice warm summer day, and I come to a turn around a corner, and there's some water in there, and I kind of lean over and make the turn, and what happens? Well, my bike goes sliding right out from under me, I hit the, you know, got road rash, and it left a mark. I have a scar on my knee to this day because of that accident. But it was a negative impression at first. But then I learned something from that. Don't do that. You know, you're riding, anytime you're riding over water, you try to keep it as erect as possible, and you turn slowly around that. But the point is, these are some experiences that might leave a mark in our lives, but we can gain something. It wasn't pleasant at first, but we gained something valuable in the end. And so it is with the marks that we might occasionally leave on others, the impressions we make on them. You know, our ways are not always going to be well received by other people, and we might offend them even by, you know, I remember having a conversation with a fellow musician in one of the bands I was in about Christmas, and she loved Christmas. I mean, this is her family time. It's so warm and fuzzy in the music, and because I wouldn't agree that this is a good holiday, she was really offended by this. And it wasn't a good impression on her. But in the end, something that appeared to be negative at first will end up being positive when the truth becomes known by these individuals, because the truth will be known. It's just a matter of time. The point is we shouldn't go around trying to be men or women pleasers just so that we keep the peace. When it's not right, we don't have to accept it, and we can politely and respectfully voice our opinion, but let it be done out of love. Let it be done out of respect and not because of self-righteousness. Because when we start to, pride or self-righteousness enters the picture, well, then the impression we leave is altogether different, and it's not going to be positive, I think. You know, Paul said in Romans 13, he said to render, therefore, to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, and he said fear to whom fear, or in other words, reverence or respect to whom respect, and honor to whom honor. So we pay taxes because the state tells us to, but also because God tells us to. We tithe because God tells us to. We respect authority figures because God says that we are to respect those in positions of authority, and in this way we are actually showing respect for God. And so even if somebody is not in a position of authority, there is a measure of honor or respect that we owe to everybody that we come into contact with, and the way we treat others makes a strong impression on them, especially the first impression. We've all heard that expression, the first impression. And that's something that often lasts. It sticks with people for quite some time. Now notice what the Apostle Peter wrote in this regard to due respect. In 1 Peter, in chapter 2, and verse 15. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. Yes, making a positive impression. As free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for or vice, but as bondservants of God. Honor all people, he said. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king. So we cannot say that we obey God and then use our faith to disobey the laws of society. No, we cannot. It's conflicting, really, is what it is. And the point of this scripture, for me reading it anyway, is the honor that is due to everyone. There is a measure of honor and respect due to everyone, and the apostle here relates it directly to the respect that we have for God. Fear God, revere God, and honor the king. So God if we think about it, God hopefully is making a huge impression on each one of us. And we are told to reflect the light of Christ. And so that means that the marks that are left in our minds, in our lives, the impressions of Christ are to be reflected upon others positively. And all of us, if you think about it, all of us carry around bits and pieces of other people in our lives constantly. I mean, if you sat down, you took a notepad and sat down and you started writing the thoughts about other people, what you remember about certain people that affected you in your life, we could probably write a book or volumes, numerous volumes, of those people that made a difference in our lives, that left a positive impression, that showed us something that we put to use as we went about our own lives. Could be a history teacher. I remember a history teacher in junior high school that explained history to me so well. He made it interesting, and it stuck with me. Some of those things that I learned, or a coworker, or a friend that maybe taught us how to tie a necktie. I mean, we didn't learn that on our own. Maybe we watched a YouTube video nowadays. But in any case, a neighbor who displayed hospitality to us when we moved into the neighborhood. And then we thought, that is such a great idea. When we get a new neighbor, I'm going to bring them a plate of cookies. I'm going to show them the kind of hospitality I was shown. I mean, our minds are literally filled with impressions that are made upon us, even from birth. We didn't learn to eat and properly on our own. You know, who taught us to chew with their mouth closed? Who taught us how to use a fork? Who taught us how to walk or tie our shoes? Who taught us what a respectable and honorable person should be like? Numerous people. It began with our parents, and then it moved on to other mentors or elders in our life. We reap knowledge all the time from family, from school, from the Bible, and we harvest lessons from our relationships, from marriage, from friendships, and we continually glean from other people that we have experiences with, conversations, our work relationships, and all of these impressions that are left upon us, they make up who we are. They help us to understand what works, what we should do, and what doesn't work, and what we should not. And so the people of integrity are the ones who I think make the strongest and possibly the most valuable impressions on us. In 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 Thessalonians 5, you know, we never know who we are going to impress or when. And because of this, we must always be on our best behavior, I think. We must always be reaching for a high level of integrity. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21, familiar scripture to us. Well, let's read verse 19, begin in verse 19. Do not quench the spirit. In other words, stay in the faith. Do not despise prophecies. Test all things and hold fast what is good. Abstain from every form of evil. So, testing all things, Paul is telling us to prove them to be true. Prove them to be right and good. Take hold of, retain the truth, and hold fast to it. And then he said to abstain from every form of evil. Now, the King James translation says to abstain from all appearance. Perhaps abstain even from the appearance of evil. Because sometimes what we are doing might technically not be wrong. But I think what Paul was relating is that even if it can appear to be wrong, then the behavior must be avoided because we're making an impression on other people. And there's a great example of this in the book of Corinthians. If you go over to 1 Corinthians in chapter 8, chapter 8, and I'm just going to read the entire chapter because I think it's very helpful in regards to the subject today. And this is concerning meat that was used in an offering made to an idol. It's not talking about any meat. It's talking about clean meat. Meat that is considered clean according to God, according to His standards of what the animal, how the animal was designed. So in verse 1 of chapter 8, now, concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge, and knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And if anyone thinks that he knows anything, he knows nothing, yet he, as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, this one is known by him. And therefore, concerning the eating of things offered to idols, we know that the idol is nothing in the world, and that there is no other God but one. In other words, it's not really a God. It's fake. It's something designed by men. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as there are many gods and many lords, in other words, many different things or doctrines that people follow that's not of God, yet there is one God, the Father, of whom all things, and we, the Father of whom are all things, and we for him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, through whom are all things, and through whom we live. However, in verse 7, there is not in everyone that knowledge. For some with conscience of the idol, intend now, eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. So it's talking about individuals that will be offended. Even though the idol is nothing, it really is nothing, it's just meat. It's meat that God considers clean according to how the animal is designed. It's not like offering it to an idol, contaminate it, and now it's poisonous. Or you're putting some evil spirit into your mouth because you're eating some meat offered to an idol. But food, he said, does not commend us to God. For neither if we eat are we the better, nor if we do not eat, we are the worse. So it doesn't really matter. But it does matter to those people who are weak in the faith, who might not quite understand. So he continued to say, but beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish, for whom Christ died. And so what he's saying is that if you are going to affect someone, to leave an impression on someone that causes them to think, well, maybe God's standards aren't so high. Maybe I don't really need to pay attention to some of these other things that are taught. You know, here I see somebody else enjoying that food, that meat offered to an idol. Maybe it's not such a big deal. Maybe these idols are not such a big deal. Maybe I can have a few in my home as decorations. I mean, they're very pretty, overlaid in gold, have rubies for eyes. But this could cause, so we're seeing that this can cause some to stumble in this way. And we don't want to be a part of that. We don't want to have anything to do with that. And because of your knowledge, in verse 11, shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. But when you thus sin against their brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. And therefore, he said, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. So we don't want to be responsible for causing somebody else to stumble. No, Christ said, woe to the world because of offenses, but offenses must come. But then he said, woe to the man or woman by whom these offenses come. You know, causing somebody to turn away from the law of God should be a great concern to us, because God is extremely concerned about this. And so we don't want to leave impressions on others that might lead them in the wrong direction, because the law is holy. The law is just and good, and the marks that we leave in the minds of others should be a confirmation of that law, not causing people to question that law. Romans in chapter 12, there is a wonderful chapter in the book of Romans that describes the impressions that we should be trying to leave in the minds of others. In Romans 12, in verse 1, speaking of how we should live our lives, Paul wrote, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." So the way that we live, the things that we do, these are to be done to the glory of God. "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given to me, the impressions of God, of Christ, left on the heart of Paul, and the reflection of those impressions in his life," which is the definition of grace, "to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly or realistically, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function, and so we, being many, are one body in Christ and individually members of one another, having gifts differing according to the grace, the influence that is given to us. So let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in a proportion of our faith. Our ministry, let us use it in ministering. He who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality or sincerity and generosity, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness." That's often hard to do, huh? To show mercy with cheerfulness. When somebody has hurt us, to be glad about it. "Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly and affectionate to one another with brotherly love. In honor, giving preference to one another," or deference to one another. "Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep." Compassion. Be of the same mind toward one another. "Do not set your mind on high things," being proud or arrogant, "but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Repay no one evil for evil. Provide things honest," or "regard good things in the sight of all men. And if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, don't avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Eternal." And therefore, and he quotes Proverbs here, "If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head." So don't be overcome by evil. Don't do as the world does, trying to get back at one another. "They hurt me, so I'm going to hurt them. They need to deserve to feel how I feel." No, do the opposite. Overcome evil with good. And if we do these things, we will leave a lasting impression on other people for good. And not everyone is going to think it's good right now, but the truth will be known in the not too distant future. And so now is our time to affect others in a positive way. Make a good impression right now while we have the opportunity. There was an article written in the Associated Press that says, "For a yearly fee of $19.95, you can send emails after you die." The credit goes to Dr. David Eagleman, an assistant professor of neuroscience and psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine. He created Death Switch, an automated online service that allows a person to send an email after your death to pre-selected recipients, usually containing personal information of the deceased, but it can be anything from computer passwords or a love note to the last words in an argument, Eagleman says. Eagleman sees his service as a way of bridging mortality. The idea for Death Switch came from his love of the internet and how it can extend the human experience. It would be so interesting, he says, to receive an email from someone who passed away. I don't think there's any honor in being silent in death. Brian Rosenthal, the CEO of a Silicon Valley-based e-commerce consulting firm, has signed up for Death Switch, and he said it extends our reach. You can store some part of yourself that lasts beyond your life. Is this what we want to leave people with nowadays? You know, an email telling them something about ourselves or having the last final word in an argument that we had? You know, do we want our lasting impressions to be robotic? Cold? An email? Emails can often be misinterpreted. It really loses something in conveying the message in an email. And so we want to be remembered for something else. We want to be remembered for sincerity. We want to be remembered for good, for love, for being a person of integrity who truly cared about the things of God, and in this way then truly cared about other people. Deuteronomy 11 says, now, some might argue that, well, what other people think of me, that doesn't really matter. I don't care what people think. Now, essentially, that's true. But think about this. You know, God cares about more people than you. Oh, he loves you, and he cares about you dearly, and he cares about me. And his focus is on those people that he has called, but God also cares about the billions of other people in the world. And he cares about what kind of mark or impression we are leaving in the minds of others. Now, ancient Israel, they left their mark in the pages of history. Those people, that nation, those tribes left a lasting impression on millions at their time and afterward. Now, sadly, much of what they left are examples of failure and what not to do. But it didn't have to be that way. That was not God's intent. He gave them an enormous opportunity to affect the entire world for good. In Deuteronomy 11, in verse 22, God said, "For if you carefully keep all these commandments, which I command you to do, to love the Eternal your God, to walk in all his ways, and to hold fast to him, then the Eternal will drive out all these nations from before you, and you will dispossess greater and mightier nations than yourselves. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. From the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even to the western sea, shall be your territory." What an opportunity. Now, interestingly, throughout the Arabian Peninsula, there are chiseled marks or inscriptions of footprints in the rocks. They are found throughout hundreds of square miles. They are found at the base of a mountain that is now called Jabal al-Laz, which is the real Mount Sinai. They are found at the rock in Horeb. They are found all the way down to the coast of the Red Sea and all throughout the wilderness where these impressions, these footprints carved in rocks in the shape of the sole of a foot, not with toes, but just the sole of a foot. And it's actually the same shape that is found in the walls of the encampment that still stands at Gilgal, where they first made camp when they crossed the River Jordan. Now, these impressions, archaeologists and word scholars have interpreted these impressions to be a way of saying, I was here. We were here. And the people who made them is believed to be the Israelites that wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. And the reason that they made them is likely because of God's promise that we just read in verse 24, where it says, every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. And so it seems that simply standing in the area was not enough to the Israelites, that they left their mark, they left an impression of themselves in these places so that future generations would know that we were here. This is ours. But this impression, in order for God to fulfill his promise, was not enough. It wasn't enough that they stood in that area or they walked through that area. And most of the Israelites we see had forgotten the terms of the agreement, if you will walk in these commandments. And so therefore, those footprints have been forgotten by most. They've been rediscovered by some, and some are sharing those footprints today. There are images of them you can find on the internet and in some books that we have in the church library. But what would have really left an impression in the minds of future generations is if they would have followed God's commandments, if they would have fulfilled the contract or the covenant that he made with them. And so the lasting impression that Israel left as a whole was not a good one. And the only good that came from it was an example of the wickedness that people should not do. Now, there were others that made good impressions that are in the scriptures, people like David or Samuel or Ruth or Elijah and others. And though these people were not entirely well received at their time or in their age, they did leave a positive mark in the pages of history. And these marks, these impressions, will eventually be known by all. But this is our opportunity. The point is, this is our opportunity to leave our mark, to make an impression. And if you go to Matthew 12 again, Matthew 12, as Christ said, an Israelite indeed. That is what he looks for, people to be an Israelite indeed, from the heart, from the inside out, and from the outside in. Because we are going to affect others in this life in some way, whether we want to or not, as I had said. And if our good behavior is not well received at the time, well, we don't have to worry. We've done our part. And Christ did well by healing the man with the withered hand on the Sabbath. But those who did not understand him did not understand God, and they were not impressed at that time. As it says in Matthew 12 and verse 14, then the Pharisees went out and they plotted against him how they might destroy him. Instead of rejoicing at the good that was done, at the evidence of God being in their midst through his Spirit, no, they sought evil instead. But Christ said later that this is expected. He said, if they hated you, they will, if they hate you, they if they hated me, they will hate you. And he said, if they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. But he also related that nothing could be more honorable than to stand up for what is right in the face of evil. And Christ encouraged us in the Beatitudes. He said, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, because they will inherit the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. And then he said, hey, they did the same thing to the prophets, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And it's an honor to walk in their footsteps, to walk in the same impressions that they left for future generations. And so despite the persecution that was mounting on the other side, Christ would not back down from doing good. In verse 15, but when Jesus knew it, he stopped healing people because he was afraid. No. No, he withdrew from there. He went and with the great multitudes that followed him, and he healed them all. He continued the work. And yet he warned these people not to make him known. It wasn't his time yet. Don't go spreading it around. There was a predefined period of time that he would minister, that it might be fulfilled, it continues in verse 17, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, "Behold, my servant, whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will declare justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel, nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench, until he sends forth justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles will trust." And so Christ, what this is relating is that Christ would not attempt to fix that broken system. He wasn't attempting to fix the entire world during his ministry. He wasn't going to give in and try to stop all of the wildfires or try to save the whales or try to curb global warming or climate change. Not that it's wrong to stand up for what is right, but what he was trying to do is he was trying to help people, making an impression on others of what they should seek in life, of the hope that they should have, of something coming that is going to be far greater than our current world. And he did this through his wisdom, through his parables, through his correction of wrongdoing, and the service that he gave to other people, even by his healings. And by this, he earned the respect of tens and hundreds of thousands well into our age, including Gentiles. And perhaps, if you think about it, perhaps the biggest impression, or the most important impression, that he made was upon God the Father, who declared, "Behold, my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." Not proud of, sticking his chest out, but well pleased. Very, very happy with his work. 2 Corinthians 5, and we will end over there. Apologize for going a little long today, but it is one message, so we can take a little bit extra time. Yeah, right. I know what you're thinking. So we have an opportunity to make an impression on people, and we also have the opportunity to make an impression on God by showing him what we care about, by showing him what our motivation is, what our hope is, what we seek in life. Is it ego, to feed our ego? Is it pride? Is it pleasure? Is it the stuff that this world has to offer? Or do we seek those things that are eternal, those things Christ referred to as the treasures in heaven, where dust does not fall upon, where moth and rust does not corrupt? And so, the impression that God has of each of us is going to decide whether we will be chosen or not. And it will decide what our reward will be. In 2 Corinthians 5, and verses 9 through 10, one of the scriptures that relates this truth, "Therefore we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to God. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in his body according to what he has done in this life, whether it's good or bad." And so now is our opportunity to leave a mark. Now is our chance to impress upon God and to impress upon others how God desires for all of us to live. And so think about this every day. Try not to leave a bad taste in the mouth of others. You know, remember each day to be grateful, to show appreciation to other people, to be respectful and affectionate, to be helpful, well-pleasing to God. Stand firm on our moral ground, of course, but don't be quick to misjudge or to be self-righteous. Impress upon others that seeking the kingdom of God is the only real hope that this future only real hope of the future that this world has. Give people a sweet, savory flavor of what individuals in God's kingdom will be like. And hopefully those people that we live with, those people that we work with, will remember this. And they will take a piece of us with them. and that piece of us is truly a piece of Christ, a lasting impression that preaches the good news of the coming kingdom of God.